From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, our weekly drop-in at the UN headquarters in New York begins with a press conference from the Secretary General's spokesperson, Stephane Dujarric, followed by Monica Grayley, the spokesperson for the President of the General Assembly.
All right, good afternoon. I will start off with a trip announcement. The Secretary General will be departing New York on Friday, the 23rd of August, for a three-country trip that will take him to France, Japan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. His first stop will be in France, where he'll attend the G7 summit in Biarritz. At the summit, the Secretary General will participate in sessions on climate, biodiversity, and oceans, on fighting against inequalities, and on partnerships with Africa and the Sahel. He will also hold bilateral meetings with a number of world leaders on the sidelines of the summit. The Secretary General will travel then to Yokohama in Japan on the evening of the 27th of August to participate in the 7th Tokyo International Conference on African Development, otherwise known as TICAD. That meeting is led by the Japanese government and co-sponsored by the United Nations, the UN Development Program, and the African Union Commission, as well as the World Bank. The Secretary General will speak at the opening session, a special conference on peace and stability in the Horn of Africa and the neighboring region, and a thematic session on climate change and disaster risk reduction. While in Japan, he will meet with the country's Prime Minister, Mr. Shinzo Abe, and Foreign Minister Taro Kono, as well as heads of states and as well as a number of heads of states and governments attending TICAD. Then on Saturday, 31 August, the Secretary General is scheduled to arrive in the Democratic Republic of the Congo for a three-day visit to take stock of and mobilize additional support for the response to the Ebola outbreak. In the province of North Kivu, he is scheduled to meet with Ebola survivors and health workers during a visit to an Ebola treatment center. While in the country's east, the Secretary General will also assess the implementation of the UN peacekeeping mission and the intervention brigade of its mandate to protect civilians and support the authorities in the country to consolidate peace and stabilize the DRC. The Secretary General will then go on to Kinshasa to meet with the President of the DRC, Felix Tshisekedi, and other government officials, members of the opposition, and representatives from civil society organizations. We expect him to be back in New York on 3 September. This morning, the Secretary General spoke at the opening of a photo exhibition to mark the second International Day of Remembrance of and tribute to the victims of terrorism. He reiterates that the threat of terrorism and violent extremism is among our most complex challenges and paid tribute to the innocent victims of attacks around the world. The Secretary General said he was deeply moved by the courage and resilience of survivors of terrorist attacks that he met earlier in the year. Their message was clear and simple, he said. People and communities need to become closer to grow stronger and turn these harrowing experiences into powerful positive forces for change. He concluded his remarks by calling for more support for victims and survivors of terrorism, notably by finding innovative ways to support the victims' rights, justice, reparations, healing, and livelihoods. The photo exhibit titled Surviving Terrorism, The Power of Resilience is going to be on display in the Secretariat lobby through the end of the month. You'll have seen that in a statement we issued yesterday evening, the Secretary General said he is deeply troubled by the continued escalation in northwest Syria and the prospect of an offensive deeper into Idlib, which could trigger a new wave of human suffering, possibly impacting more than 3 million people. He strongly condemns continued attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure, including on healthcare and educational facilities. He urges all parties to respect fully international humanitarian law. The Secretary General reiterates his urgent call for the September 2018 Memorandum of Understanding on Idlib to be upheld. He stresses the importance of advancing the UN-facilitated political process in Geneva, mandated by Resolution 2254. And to the point on Syria, our humanitarian colleagues tell us that yesterday 3 civilians were reportedly killed and 14 others wounded, including 2 children, in clashes in Idlib. People continue to be displaced, with some 1,500 people living in northern Hama governorates, reportedly uprooted further northwards into Idlib governorate yesterday. And between the 1st of May and the 18th of August of this year, 576,000 movements by displaced people have been recorded in the northwest of the country. Many people have been displaced up to 5 times, with some having forced to move as many as 10 times due to the ongoing fighting. And I have an additional humanitarian update from Yemen. The humanitarian coordinator from Yemen, Lise Grande, said today that commitments made by donor countries at a pledging event in February for the crisis have failed to materialize, with several major programs have been forced to close in recent weeks. A staggering 22 life-saving programs will close in the next 2 months unless funds are received. The UN was forced to suspend most of Yemen's vaccination campaign in May, and the procurement of medicines has stopped as thousands of health workers are no longer receiving financial support. Unless the funds promised at the February conference are received in the coming weeks, food rations for 12 million people will be reduced. At least 2.5 million malnourished children will be cut off from services which have been keeping them alive. Some 19 million people will lose access to health care, including 1 million women who depend on the UN for reproductive health. Clean water programs for 5 million people will shut at the end of October, and tens of thousands of displaced families may find themselves homeless. This is the largest humanitarian operation in the world, addressing the worst humanitarian crisis, Ms. Grande said. When receiving funding, it makes a huge difference. And the Security Council held an open debate today, to be followed by consultations on Somalia. Briefing council members for the first time since taking office, the Secretary General's Special Representative, James Swan, noted the progress Somalia had made towards constitutional and security sector reform, among other priorities. But he said the window to achieve further necessary progress is harrowing, with key benchmarks risking falling behind agreed deadlines. Mr. Swan stressed the need for political consensus and compromise. Also speaking at the open debate was Pramila Patton, the Secretary General's Special Representative on Sexual Violence and Conflict, who visited Somalia in July. She noted that as a direct outcome of her visit, the government committed to working with the UN system to develop a new implementation for the joint communique in the form of an action plan on ending sexual violence and conflict. And the UN Children's Fund today appealed for more than $70 million to provide life-saving humanitarian assistance to 900,000 children across Venezuela through the end of the year. The agency says it's ramping up its work to help children and families who are struggling against food shortages, limited access to essential services like health care, safe water, and education. This is part of the UN's overall humanitarian response plan, which was announced earlier. And when I'm finished, Monica will hear to brief you on General Assembly issues. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, Radhika Kumaraswamy, a member of the UN fact-finding mission on Myanmar, will be briefing you here in this room. At 12:30, the Undersecretary General for Global Communications, Alison Smail, will be here to brief you on the 68th UN Civil Society Conference, which this year will take place in Salt Lake City in Utah from the 26th to 28th of August. Also participating will be the Mayor of Salt Lake City, Jackie Biskupski, the chair of the conference, Marusha Kardama, who chairs the NGO DPI Executive Committee, Fanny Moonlin, and a civil society youth representative. And the theme of the conference this year is Building Inclusive and Sustainable Cities and Communities. It will be moderated by Maher Nasser. 2 seconds, please. I'd been asked about reaction to the latest political developments in Sudan, and I can say that we warmly welcome the nomination by the Transitional Military Council and the Force for Freedom and Change for the Sovereign Council, as well as its subsequent formal formation and swearing in today. We take note of the inclusion of 2 women in the Sovereign Council and strongly further encourage the inclusion of women in all transitional bodies in Sudan. Sudan, including in but not limited to the Transitional Legislative Assembly. We also understand that the Prime Minister designate, Mr. Abdallah Hamdok, is set to arrive in Khartoum today to be sworn in. We wish him the best in leading the new transitional government and look forward to the speedy selection of his cabinet. As the Secretary General said in his statement after the signing ceremony this weekend, the UN looks forward to engaging with and supporting the transitional governing institutions. We also reiterate our commitment to assisting the transition process as it seeks to achieve the long-standing aspiration of the people of Sudan for democracy and peace. Lastly, extremely important, we say muchas gracias to our friends in Paraguay who have stepped up to the plate and paid their dues in full for 2019, bringing us to how many member states?
112.
I'd hate to go backwards. Nice try, Zidi. All right, Masuji, go ahead.
Thank you.
United Nations Human Rights, Ambassador Priyanka Chopra has now been tweeting in favor of the Indian Army, which is oppressing the Kashmiri people and women and children. Does she still maintain her status as the goodwill ambassador?
She is. I would refer your question to UNICEF, as I think she.
But
as far as I know, she's a goodwill, or her association with the UN is through UNICEF. So I have no information.
Reason is simply just because of the fact that Secretary General has.
I understand the reason for your question. What I'm saying is you should ask UNICEF, because that's who she's associated with.
Okay, so on Kashmir, and let me ask you a question on Kashmir, that will the Secretary General, because given the statement that he gave recently, wherein he said the situation should be resolved in accordance with the United Nations Charter and the resolution, in that case, will the Secretary General push India and Pakistan for some sort of talks?
Well, Secretary General is always a strong believer in dialogue. Majid, and then Idi.
Thank you, Stefan, and happy birthday.
It was yesterday, but I warmly accept your wishes throughout the year.
Looks like our easy question is making you younger every year.
Flattery will get you everywhere. Yes, go ahead.
I know. quote unquote easy questions. Yesterday's meeting between Secretary Pompeo and Secretary General, other than broad range of issues, what was the focus of that meeting, and was possible U.S. cut of their contribution into the United Nations and the peacekeeping operation discussed?
Look, they had a broad range of discussions, we said. They talked about a lot of the items on the U.S.-UN agenda, including the situation in the Middle East in the broadest sense of the word, in all its dimensions, Afghanistan, Korean Peninsula, as well as a number of African files. The issue of U.S. funding is part of that U.S.-UN agenda. They are, as far as we know, and we see in press reports, there are discussions going on within the administration, and it's not for us to comment on those discussions. Yes, Edie.
Steph, does the Secretary General have any comment on several hundred Syrians who have been refugees in Turkey being picked up at work and taken to the border and sent back to Syria? And this has been happening in the past month.
This is an issue that UNHCR has been in the lead with the Turkish authorities, as far as I understand. Our principal position remains that any return of refugees should be done on a voluntary basis, which is very important. Yep.
Hey, Stefan. So does the Secretary General have any comment on the United States testing the cruise missile after it pulls out of the INF treaty?
The Secretary General would call on all member states to redouble their efforts on disarmament issues. James.
Thanks, Stefan. You had a really worrying statement about Yemen and the fact that the lack of funding means you're going to have to pull some really important services there. Is it right to say that the vast majority of this money that was pledged earlier this year that has not been paid comes from the UAE and Saudi Arabia?
I just got the note before I came in, and I didn't have a chance to look at the numbers. But the pledges, the money received and not received, is up on OCHA's website. I can help you look for them. So I don't have those numbers ahead of me in front of me because I just got the note, Señor.
Thank you, Stephen, and happy birthday as well. And two questions about the region, South America. One is, and the crisis is happening now in Brazil, with the deforestation is increasing in a really high level. And the other question is about the Venezuela as well. And what is the Secretary General reaction on the exodus of Venezuelans increasing? And Colombia is requesting and saying that the aid to help all these refugees is really low and still need more help from the international community.
We have been advocating for much greater support for all the countries that neighbor Venezuela and that have been generously hosting refugees, including Colombia and Brazil and a number of other countries. This is reflected in the humanitarian appeals that we have made, right? The High Commissioner for Refugees himself was in Brazil and in the region not long ago, strengthening that appeal. I think where those countries are showing a great amount of generosity. I mean, I would also underscore the decision taken by the Colombian government to grant citizenship to a large number of children born of refugees in their country. But they need the support of the international community, and that means financial support. On the issue of the Amazon forest, the issue of deforestation is one of great concern to us. As we all know, forests, large forests around the world, play a critical part in our efforts to mitigate the impact of climate change. Madam.
Thank you, Stefan. I wanted to stay on the topic of refugees. As you know, it was scheduled tomorrow that Myanmar's government approved to send back nearly 3,500 refugees from Bangladesh back into Myanmar. And as you said, the Secretary General says that this should be on a voluntary basis, of course. But it's just been proven just this month, in fact, that the International Fact-Finding Mission found that, you know, Myanmar's military lacks pretty much accountability, and that the businesses, there are businesses that are invested in helping with the violation of these human rights. So it's clearly not safe for these people to go back.
We've seen and very much taken note of the work done by the fact-finding mission, which was appointed by the Human Rights Council. As you say, the position of the Secretary General on the Rohingyas is with all refugees, that any return should be voluntary and sustainable in safety and in dignity to their place of origin and choice. We will work with all the parties involved towards that goal, right? In November, I think there were already issues and questions, discussions regarding the repatriation process. What we said then remains valid now, is that it's important for refugees to have the full information they need to be able to make that decision. If they're going to go back voluntarily, they need to have access to information in order to make an informed decision. Right. They are the ones themselves who will decide whether or not they go back.
And I know there is a survey that's been done with a few refugees so far.
What I'm saying, you know, UNHCR is working with the concerned governments to help create conditions conducive for return, to assess the whether or not these people are actually going back voluntarily, and if they decide to return. The responsibility to enable, to ensure the conditions for return is with the government of Myanmar. We remain committed to supporting the government of Myanmar's efforts to create such conditions under the term of the tripartite memorandum of understanding, which had been signed, as you may recall, between the government of Myanmar, UNHCR, and UNDP. So, from what I gather, our UNHCR colleagues are interviewing people to assess whether or not they're going back voluntarily. But the voluntary nature of repatriation is really a bedrock of our position, and for them also to have access to the information by which they can make those decisions. Masuji.
Stefan, first of all, congratulations on the birthday again. I just want to ask you about Yemen. In Yemen, this is a sphere that the way the Saudis and their cohorts are going, that Yemen might be divided in east and west or partitioned. Is that a fair rationale, or is it just being expressed because of the fact there is a report that there is a move about to divide Yemen into two parts?
Masoud, I would encourage you to read or watch what Mr. Griffiths said yesterday, yes. And he spoke eloquently to that point. I have nothing to add. In fact, I know today he is in Sana'a to meet with officials there, and then we'll return back to Jordan. So he is continuing his work in order to get the political agreement, in order to strengthen the Hodeidah agreement, and that will continue to be his mantra. Monica Grayley, all yours.
Thank you so much, Steph, and good afternoon, everyone. I hope you are well today. And before we start, I will say hello to a group of interns from DGACM, and they are here for a few months, and you'll be helping, of course, next month during the General Assembly. So welcome. And also, I know he has been here for a while, but we met today. So I'm saying also hello or bonjour to Martin Picard from Le Figaro. So welcome. The President of the General Assembly is marking the International Day of Remembrance of and Tribute to Victims of Terrorism. The PGA expresses her solidarity with all survivors and her sympathy to the families of those who perished by atrocious acts of terrorism in the world. This year, the second International Day of Remembrance of and Tribute to Victims of Terrorism focuses on the resilience of victims and their families. In her Twitter account, Ms. Maria Fernanda Espinosa recalled her encounter in Chad with Halima, a survivor of terrorism at the age of 15. Who refused to become a suicide bomber. After being captured and released, she became a paralegal and works today as a gender activist. The PGA said that she felt inspired by Halima, who was a true example of resilience and strength to the world. As a paralegal, Halima has helped hundreds of women and girls to escape extremism and terrorism by her work with educational activities, and also to combat gender-based violence. President Espinosa believes that more must be done to tackle terrorism and to support victims of acts of terror as they try to recover from violence, trauma, and to rebuild their lives. The PGA met Halima during a visit to Lake Chad, which she undertook in May, you may remember, perhaps. And more information on our website. And Ms. Espinosa has congratulated the administration of San Francisco International Airport on the decision to ban plastic bottles from its premises. Since yesterday, 20 August, the airport is phasing out plastic bottles in a drive to become the first zero-waste airport by 2021. Passengers are encouraged to bring their own recycled aluminum bottles or to consume water from the water fountains and the hydration stations. And I heard there are 100 hydration stations there. The PGA also said that initiatives such as this help to promote climate action, to tackle climate change. She also said that she was encouraged by all individuals and institutions who are doing their part in order to foster a greener and sustainable world for all. On 1st June, Ms. Espinosa launched, together with the governments of Antigua and Barbuda and Norway, the St. John's Declaration as part of her global campaign against plastic pollution to eliminate single-use plastics from our daily lives and to promote environmental action around the world. And also, the PGA issued a tweet today expressing concern with forest fires around the globe. Mrs. Espinosa says that forests are vital to tackle climate change, to foster biodiversity conservation and food security. So she appealed to all to do more to protect forests and to tackle and to promote urgent climate action. And I have one more note for you. As you may remember, the PGA is going to Austria today. She will be there until Sunday, and I will bring some updates on the trip to you as it happens, also on our Twitter account. Any questions for today? Masood, how are you?
All right. How are you, Monica?
Mm-hmm.
Monica, I'm going to ask you the question that I would asked Sipon earlier about this appointment of the UN Goodwill Ambassador Priyanka Chopra, who has been tweeting in favor of the Indian Army. Does she deserve to remain as the UN Ambassador, given that the Indian Army is known to have killed children, women and children in Kashmir, occupied Kashmir?
As you know, Goodwill Ambassadors are appointed by the respective agencies of the United Nations. So the appointment of the person in question is something that you have to inquire or ask UNICEF. In regards with this particular issue, Masood, I think the PGA has said before that she really hopes that relevant parties can resolve all differences through peaceful means. This is her position. But Goodwill Ambassadors from other agencies, I would like to refer you to the agency in question, UNICEF. So the answer is a little bit similar, as Steph just said to you. But thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. Anything else? If no, have a wonderful day. Yes, yes. Yes, okay. That's fine. I see you guys later. You can ask afterwards.
Yeah.
Up
just,
to you.
Just one question I have.
Yes.
About the attendees.
Sorry, guys.
Anka. I don't know if you can confirm, which is Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu and also the Saudi Crown Prince. Mm. Will they be attending? Did they confirm?
Yes, I'll have a list for you and I'll give it to you. So this list indicates, actually, we circulated it through the Anka correspondence,
yes,
but I can send it to you again. And they indicate who is coming on behalf of each country.
But they are not confirmed, those two.
No, I don't have that on my mind. Okay. I have to give the list to you so you can check yourself. Thank you very much and sorry for the false ending. Thanks.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.